And welcome back to the Rock Chalk Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Mitz. Today, we are continuing our opponent preview series. Up this week, we have the West Virginia Mountaineers. To help me do that, I have Matt Kirchner from the Smoking Musket, which is our sister site for SB Nation that does cover the Mountaineers. Matt, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. It's, you know, nice to talk about sports for a little bit, despite everything that's up in the air.
Exactly. With it right now. The potential of sports, because right now what the hope is that we're going to have a uninterrupted. You know, this is unfortunately one of the later games in the season. It's in the second half, so if something goes berserk with the virus, or you know, if something goes berserk with all the other stuff that's kind of going on in the nation right now, there is at least a non-zero chance that this game might not be played. But obviously West Virginia, to kind of talk about what happened for them last year, you know, they had a brand new coach as well last year. They had a lot of, you know, turnover on the staff, a lot of turnover in the actual roster, some quarterback questions. Like, there's a lot to figure out for this team and what's back. And obviously not being directly connected to the program, there's probably a lot that you don't necessarily know. But for those of us that don't follow West Virginia football very much, the biggest question for this team this year is going to be the quarterback, isn't it?
Yeah. So last season for West Virginia was weird. Everybody close to the program knew going in that it was going to be a rebuilding, retooling year for Neil Brown, because the cupboard was left very bare. And it was honestly a big reason why Dana bolted for a G5 job, because the talent was not there and it was going to be a subpar season. And yeah, the quarterback was a huge part of that for the first three quarters of the season. Austin Kendall came from Oklahoma, and there was a reason why you were seeing Lincoln Riley take one-year transfers rather than sitting with a kid that's been in the program for a while. Because conservatively, he was the worst quarterback that West Virginia has put on the field in 20 to 25 years. It was bad.
I mean, that's something, because, correct me if I'm wrong, like, West Virginia's had some pretty bad quarterbacks at times throughout the years. Like, they had some good ones too, but like,
if you go back far enough, West Virginia has, for a program that doesn't have a really fertile recruiting base, West Virginia has been blessed at quarterback. They went from Mark Bolger in the late 90s to 1 year of a bad quarterback situation in Rich Rodriguez's first year. Then they went to Rashid Marshall, who set records that were immediately broken by 4 years of Pat White, that went to 4 years of Geno Smith, that went to, you know, Clint Trickett, Skylar Howard, guys you're more familiar with, who were good but not bad, and then to, you know, Will Grier. And it's rare that West Virginia didn't at least have a serviceable quarterback, if not a higher end.
Guessing that is with West Virginia not being in the Big 12 for the vast majority of that history, I guess it makes sense that I wouldn't, you know, kind of be aware of how good some of those quarterbacks have been.
Yeah, West Virginia has been blessed in that, and it's been rare that they haven't.
Well, it's also one of those things, though, that the majority of those names don't really, like, bowl you over as being super fantastic. But you're right, they're also not, like, fantastically horrible well. And so, I agree. Like, the whole Austin Kendall thing, when he transferred to West Virginia, yeah, there was a little bit of worry of, well, you know, he's going within the conference. But the fact that, you know, Lincoln Riley didn't even contest it a little bit made you kind of want, because Lincoln Riley's supposed to be a quarterback guru who has already kind of shown his abilities there. You kind of had an inkling, but like you said, with a brand new coach, brand new system, trying to deal with all of this, like, it made sense. And you're right, with Will Grier leaving, like, you know, everyone thought West Virginia was going to take a step back. I think everybody could envision West Virginia. There was a possibility that West Virginia was going to be, you know, theoretically could be the worst team in the Big 12.
Yeah,
in that,
like,
year.
And that's
three of the four teams.
So. Yeah, and honestly, at the end of the season, it's weird to say that a West Virginia team overachieved to finish 5-7, but it was a 2-10, 3-9 roster. And when West Virginia barely got out of Lawrence, it became a situation where I had almost resigned myself to, like, this team might lose every game left. And Neil Brown coached his ass off, made a quarterback switch at the end of the season that was less due to stubbornness in waiting that long and more to preserving a transfer's redshirt, that got them road wins at Kansas State and TCU to end the season and was one possession away from beating Oklahoma State at home to dragging that corpse of a team across the finish line into a bowl game. So, yeah, they overachieved last year. Whether that transfers onto another overachieving season this year, I'm not so sure of. But West Virginia has a coach. I think everybody around the program has bought in.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, definitely. Like, you know, it is kind of weird because I think when you were talking about all the coaches that were coming in last year, you know, it was always like, well, you know, which one's going to have the biggest immediate impact? Which one is, you know, going to be the best long term? And, you know, it was weird because I think Chris Kleiman was, I think, the one that generally people thought was going to immediately have a really good impact because of the system he came from, you know, because of, you know, the big reliance on the lines, that's where Kansas's, you know, Kansas State's strength had been, and who could have, like, the, you know, the biggest long term. And I think there was kind of a question whether it was going to be West Virginia or if it was going to be Texas Tech. Obviously, the jury's still out on both of them, because while West Virginia seemed to be improving, Texas Tech, you know, you wonder if it's going to take a couple years for them to really show. But they had injury issues that really kind of prevented them from coming on late in the year. But West Virginia made some very solid strides. And I think the thing that kind of helps West Virginia is that their defense, I thought, seemed to be a little bit better than a lot of those early in the season scores would indicate. You know, I mean, obviously, Texas put up a lot of points against them. Iowa State and Oklahoma did. But they had a really good defensive showing against Baylor, who, you know, has a decent offense at the very least. And Charlie Brewer had a pretty good year last year. But, you know, it seems like they have the good, solid base for the defense. Now, I guess the real question becomes, though, I'm not sure what all West Virginia has lost. Did they lose a bunch from that defense, or are you expecting
a little bit?
Most of the big pieces are coming back.
Yeah, I think they bring back definitely more than they lose, especially up front. You're still going to have the Stills brothers at defensive tackle, who might be the best interior defensive line pairing in the league, both at run stopping and pass rush. I think you're going to see some immediate impact. JUCO players, maybe not as much impact freshmen, but on the edge. And the secondary, we're going to be cycling in a couple of new safeties. But on the whole, they bring back a good bit of talent on both sides this year. Now, where I wonder if they won't be able to step forward is that the rest of the league also brings back a bunch of talent. I think a lot of what helped West Virginia overachieve is that it was a little bit of a down Big 12. And like you said, a whole lot of coaching turnover and a whole lot of new guys at quarterback. And they sort of lose that advantage this year where almost everybody brings back their quarterback. There wasn't any coaching turnover unless Mike Gundy does something between now and September to get fired. And
well, don't forget Baylor, though. Matt Rhule left, and yeah, you're bringing in Dave Aranda, who is supposed to be really good defensively, and that was one of Baylor's strengths. But you also kind of have to wonder how his system is going to actually work.
So that's your question mark, and I definitely think Baylor was a team that overachieved via coaching. So we're going to see what Aranda can do. But on the whole, with everybody bringing so much back, I wonder, like, my expectations are you know, maybe West Virginia is in neutral a little bit this season before taking a bigger step forward in 2021. I think, you know, you saw a situation last year where a team that should have gone, you know, 3-9 went 5-7. And now a team this year that should, you know, on paper go 6-6, probably go 6-6 just because the talent in the conference that's brought back overall is so good.
Right. Like you said, like there's not a lot of teams that are going to be in flux as much because they're completely starting over. Now, the question, I guess, really becomes, you know, COVID-19, how does that affect teams? And I guess specifically for West Virginia, because I've gotten a pretty good sense for most teams of how it's affecting them, which ones are going to be the least affected. I guess I'm still a little curious, though, with West Virginia, because with so many changes towards the end of last season, but them kind of really stepping in. One, I don't even know if they got any spring practice. I think, you know, like there was a few teams that got a few days.
We had a couple of days to a week. It wasn't anything more than a week. And off the top of my head, I can't remember how long they were there. It kicked off, but closed down pretty quickly after it.
Yeah, because like KU didn't get anything. They were supposed to start the next week. And because they usually do their spring stuff a little bit later to try to, so they can have, you know, like recruiting visits come for their spring game that usually happens like right after everyone else's and things like that. And so it's a little weird because they got bit by that. They didn't really get to do anything in the spring. But, you know, I mean, it's a little strange because it's not like you can really do that much install in 3 or 4 days anyway. A lot of times that's just more conditioning stuff, getting back into the swing of things. And then they shut everything down. I also don't really think that, you know, most teams, especially if they're not dealing with a lot of turnover or like the quarterback is pretty set, like West Virginia doesn't really seem to have a lot of things that need to get figured out. It was more about trying to, you know, run repetitions and kind of get people more familiar with what they're actually doing. Is that a fair statement?
That's pretty fair. I think if one thing West Virginia lost big by not having spring is some evaluation on the offensive line, because if you want to identify the number one thing that hurts a team that has a bad quarterback, it's also having a historically bad running game. West Virginia last year, I mean, had multiple games where they were averaging less than a yard a carry, and honestly, I think hovered for the season around 2 yards a carry total. And it was just an offensive line that could not run block to save its life. And I think that's, you know, trying to figure out what works on that offensive line is probably the biggest thing they lost in spring. But like you said, it's less, you know, doing install and more just lost reps. Because again, it's the same thing on offense. A lot of the skill players come back for West Virginia. So we're not really expecting to break in, you know, new toys in spring, you know, lately. But yeah, the loss of repetitions sucks, but I don't think they're losing a lot of install.
Right, yeah. All right, so I do want to go ahead and kind of look through West Virginia's schedule and what we can expect from the team. But before we do that, I'm going to go ahead and throw you a quick break. We'll be right back on the Rock Talk podcast. So, so looking through the schedule, you know, last year you kind of said that they overachieved. This year, you know, they could potentially be right on the, you know, right where they're supposed to be and go 6-6. I'm looking through their schedule, though, real quick, and I'm seeing where they traded, you know, Missouri and NC State last year. One, you know, supposed to be decently strong SEC team and a, you know, okay NC State team. You know, for Florida State this year, which who knows if they're actually going to be good or if they're going to be have another horrible year this year, and Maryland. You know, I think at the very least, it's probably a small step up because I think Maryland's a better team than either NC State or Missouri were last year. And Florida State is probably on par with what you were expecting NC State to be last year.
Yeah.
Seeing that this is potentially going to be an issue for them in the non-conference, that they could come out with only one win out of those three games?
It can be. Maryland's a rivalry game, and it's at home. I mean, obviously, at home might not be what it normally is, you know, for West Virginia. But, you know, you do have a rate game that West Virginia tends to do pretty well in. I think, you know, assuming, you know, Maryland's a game I think a lot of West Virginia fans expect to win. They may have some quarterback, you know, up in the air with deciding who they're going to start, you know, whether it's Tua's brother or somebody else on the roster there. And also, I am like a very, you know, early adopter of like just Mike Locksley is a bad football coach club once you're actually on the field. So I think a lot of us at B expect Neil Brown to coach circles in that game. So assuming they win their FCS game, assuming they beat Maryland, the crux of that non-conference schedule is Florida, or Florida State, sorry. And you're hoping that, like we were just talking about, a team with a new coach that went through some turmoil this offseason without that extra prep time sort of comes in flat in that first game, and you're able to steal a win in a neutral site.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the main hope. And obviously, being the first game, not really knowing what to expect with all the COVID stuff, them having all the turnover, like, yeah, I mean, Florida State, though, does have quite a bit of talent on that roster.
Yeah.
It makes me kind of wonder what to really expect from them.
Yeah, Florida State, the roster is definitely more talented than what West Virginia is right now, but it really has been over the last couple of years a program that has been in turnover, turmoil, just weird situations all around. So you're hoping that a well-coached West Virginia team can come in and, you know, steal a win there. But yeah, a 6-6 prediction for West Virginia to me hinges on at least 2-1 outside of conference play. If you're not at that benchmark, you know, it's over before you even start.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, assuming you get that 2-1, looking through the Big 12, you know, I'm trying to take a look through this schedule and kind of see where those four wins, you know, assuming that that's what they need, the four wins, where that comes from. And I'm just curious if, you know, the schedule makers didn't really do you guys any favors, because what I've noticed, there are no buys for you guys until, you know, after the eighth game of the season, which is right after the Kansas game. You start at home against Kansas State, but like, you know, like we talked about, I think Kansas State is going to continue to build on their momentum. That's going to be a tough game at the very least.
Yeah.
Don't really know what you're getting at Texas Tech. So like those first three games at home against Kansas State, at Texas Tech, and then at home against TCU, like of those, I think the only one that's really, I would consider to be a gimme game would potentially be that game against TCU. And that's assuming that Duggan doesn't take a huge step forward for him.
Yeah, the big thing for West Virginia is you're definitely hoping you can beat the teams at home that you beat on the road last year. And that's Kansas State and Texas or TCU. And then you hope that you've developed, you know, a little bit better than Texas Tech has in year two for both coaches. And then you're at a situation where you can steal a game against, you know, what you would call, I think I've just back to my math, because if you're 3-0 in that game, you're hoping you beat Kansas at home and then you're in a bowl. But
right. Yeah. Assuming everything else worked out.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, that requires you to go 5-1 to start the year. And then at that point, like, you know, Kansas and potentially Baylor, if they have problems with Aranda, like you have two more shots to get to a bowl game. But, you know, I'm wondering how likely you think it is that you're going to win all of those games, given, you know, like I would say that probably each of those first three Big 12 games are probably coin flips. Like it's probably the best way to think about it.
Yeah.
Certain teams, you know, did fairly well in their coin flip games last year. Texas Tech was one that didn't last year. And so you have to wonder if that's going to kind of turn around for them this next year coming up. I personally don't think that Texas Tech is going to take that step forward this year just because of all the quarterback controversy. Like, I'm willing to comfortably say that I think West Virginia should win that game. The one that worries me of that entire stretch is the Kansas State game. Because, again, I think that Kansas State is probably – of those three, the best team has the least questions, and it's just a matter of, you know, is West Virginia going to be able to get everything together by the fourth week of the season to overcome what I think is probably a talent difference and And I'd give a slight coaching edge, just what I've seen so far from them, to Chris Klieman. But I think that one's going to be fairly close. That's the one that I think I would worry about if I was a West Virginia fan. But, you know, do most West Virginia fans kind of share similar sentiments, or am I reading too much into it?
K-State has always been, like, especially early on in the Big 12, a thorn in the side team for West Virginia. So there's definitely always worry whenever you play them. You under Snyder, they're well coached. They play a different brand of football than everybody else does in the Big 12. It's not, you know, quite preparing for a triple option team, but it's just a different week of prep than, you know, really much of anything else you see in the Big 12 in terms of physicality. So yeah, that being your conference opener, you know, it's better than alternatives. I think getting them first instead of an Oklahoma, Iowa State, Texas situation gives you a better chance of getting off on the right foot.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. All right. So kind of moving ahead then, because we talked about the first half of the schedule. Second half of the schedule starts at Texas. You know, I don't really know what to think about this Texas team because, again, you know, Tom Herman is there at the top, but they are completely redoing their entire offensive and defensive coordinator and, like, most of the staff. I think I was actually talking with Gerald Goodridge from the Texas site, and he was talking about how, I believe he said that 7 out of the 10 coaches in terms of the actual on-field coaching position are all new coming into this year. So, like, they have a ton of turnover on their staff. And with COVID-19, you know, are you expecting, though, West Virginia, like, is there a talent disparity there that you think is going to potentially be a problem? Or do you think that West Virginia is going to be competitive in that game?
Weird things happen in Texas, West Virginia games. Like, West Virginia has always been a team that, for the most part, likes to get up, like, the manufacture a chip on their shoulder and get up against, you know, the brand name teams. So, you know, if that game was at home, I'd almost spring for an upset this year. I don't think they quite have the guns to go into Austin and win. But again, you say go into Austin with the caveat that there's probably not going to be anybody there.
Right.
But you also have to factor in that Tom Herman is going to be coaching for his job. What you hope happen if you're West Virginia is that the wheels have fallen off at that point for Texas and that they, you know, botch the first half of their season and you catch them, you know, potentially with Tom Herman on the end of his rope. But really, yeah, that back half of the schedule for West Virginia is tough. So they do need to get wins early.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. Before we talked about the Kansas, I was going to skip over the Kansas game and just talk about, you know, that final stretch that's back-to-back games in the month of November against, you know, at home against Oklahoma, on the road against Oklahoma State, at home against Baylor, and then on the road against Iowa State to end the season. Like, of those, the only one that looks to me winnable right now is maybe the Baylor one, and that's if Baylor just never really gets it going. Because, you know, even if they struggle early in the year, you have to think that unless the wheels just completely fall off for them, that they're going to get it together by the end of the year and at least be a tough game. So, like, it seems like if you're going to get bowl eligible, you have to, like, you have to count on being bowl eligible by the time that Kansas game is over. Does that sound fair?
That definitely sounds fair. And one thing that's been almost a constant for West Virginia since they've been in the Big 12, I think you could count, you know, maybe like 2 years where they haven't been faced with a month of the season where they play the four best teams in the conference in a row and really need to figure out how to make something of it. And it's been tough. You know, multiple times we've had to do that Oklahoma State turnaround in back-to-back weeks, and that's never fun. But yeah, this West Virginia team needs to get its wins early. I think a lot of West Virginia fans may be kind of falling into a trap where they see that Neil Brown took a 2-10 or 3-9 team and won 5 games, and now thinking that he can
take get better.
Yes, and now expecting him to take a team that should win 5 or 6 games and win 8 or 9, and I just don't see that happening you know, please prove me wrong. I think West Virginia might have trouble keeping Neil Brown if he does that. But
yeah,
I think
very, very true.
Yeah, that's honestly in the next 2 to 3 seasons, keeping Neil Brown in Morgantown is probably athletic department priority number one, especially if he keeps overachieving. But yeah, like,
yeah,
I really think this is a neutral season for West Virginia, where going 6-6, no matter how you put it together, is a success. And then, you know, going forward into 2021, you have your quarterback back again, you know, as a second season as a full-time starter. And that's when, you know, my target is for West Virginia to really get back, you know, competing.
Yeah. So that was going to be my next question is, you know, what would be considered a success? Because I can make an argument, you know, from the outside that West Virginia fans should honestly feel that maybe even a 4-8, but 5-7 at the least would have to be considered successful, just because the way the schedule lines up and the fact that you probably have a harder non-conference schedule this year than you did last year. So like if they were 5-7 last year, everything else is about the same, you know, they really stole a couple games that they shouldn't have last year. So like a 4-8, you could argue is an improvement if they're competitive in the games they're supposed to. I mean, do you think that West Virginia fans are going to be unrealistic, or will they consider a 5-7 campaign to be successful if they, say lose, two of the three non-conference and they lose to Kansas State, but then they win all the other games that they're supposed to win? Like, do you think that they will have problems with that?
I don't think anybody
will be considered successful.
I don't think anybody's going to be calling for Neil Brown after this season, you know, no matter what happens outside of like a complete
walkout.
But I think you can make the argument that depending on how it looks on the field, another 5-7 could be okay. But I think a lot of people really do expect this team to at least, you know, get to a bowl after they overachieved last year. I think anybody that wants to see this team go 8-4 or 9-3 is getting the cart ahead of the horse a little bit, just considering what the rest
almost
of the
definitely
league brings back. Not saying it's impossible, but it's definitely, you know, I think West Virginia fans are prone to overreaction, and I think it was a miracle that we got so many of them to buy into the concept of a year zero last year. And now seeing him overachieve a little bit in that year zero has heightened expectations, but I think most reasonable people you talk to set 6-6 is that sort of baseline goal of what would be good. But 5-7, you know, if they do that again, considering that they were ahead of schedule, I think most people
would.
Yeah,
definitely.
And especially with the, you know, environment that has taken over this offseason.
Yeah,
I don't
think
we'll be too mad.
Yeah, I would hope not. Like, especially in a COVID year, like, unless you're just completely falling off, getting like 0 or 1 wins, I think almost everybody should be very forgiving of what happens in this year, because you don't know how it's going to affect the schools. You don't know how it's going to affect what they're planning on putting in. You're going to have a really hard time making very honest evaluations of coaches, you know, after a year like this, especially if something could go entirely, you know, horribly wrong. Like, I would hate to see a coach lose his job, other than, you know, maybe a guy who's been underachieving for years and this is finally like the final nail in his coffin.
Yeah.
But I would hate to see a guy who has some promise lose his job because, hey, guess what? He had, you know, 3 key players get COVID on the week that, you know, of the biggest game that really kind of, like, I would hate to see something like that happen to a guy where it's completely outside of his control.
I don't know how any athletic department, I know they will, can really fire a coach after this season. One, just because, like you said, the environment of it. Two, I don't know how you're going to afford it. But
true.
Like,
so,
I don't think
so
nobody.
Final question for you, because we are getting a little low on time here. My final question for you has to do specifically with this Kansas game, because, you know, given the fact that Kansas was actually not that far away from potentially winning the game against West Virginia this year, or this last year, yes, it's going to be you know, it's if I think it's a home game for you guys because it was in Lawrence this last year, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, the one thing that kind of, or I guess the first thing I want to say is like what where Kansas fans could potentially be hopeful is the fact that, you know, Brent Dierman wasn't in charge in that particular game and it was still as close as it was. You know, it's at the end of an 8-game stretch for West Virginia before their bye. Kansas will have had their bye, I think, within the last week prior to, like, I think they have one more game before that, but they've already had their bye, so they've already kind of recharged, had that extra week to kind of take a look at it. For Kansas specifically, like, it seems like a lot of things are lining up for Kansas to be super competitive in this game and potentially win it. What is it about this game for West Virginia, either that gives you confidence that they're going to beat Kansas or scares you about this potential Kansas game?
So I definitely can see this being a game for Kansas fans to look at and say, hey, that's a road game we can steal. And I think that West Virginia still has a talent advantage over Kansas, you know, whether that changes, you know, with less on the sidelines in the next couple of years may be different, but I think that it's still ticked off for West Virginia as a game that they will win. But honestly, like, completely certain, anytime I go into a stadium and I see Les Miles on the opposite sideline, it's not a guaranteed win. There's no just show up and beat Kansas anymore as long as Les is there, because weird things happen.
Well, and it's funny too, because everyone would always say, you know, like Les's biggest weakness was, you know, adapting his offense. Well, he has an offensive coordinator in Brent Dierman who is at the cutting edge of what, you know, is happening and is being successful in the way that he does, like the RPO offense and things like that.
Yeah, so, you absolutely saw Kansas flip switches in the second half of last season after making that change. So I don't think it's anywhere, you know, near the certainty it's been in the past when you have Kansas on your schedule, just because Les is there. But I think that West Virginia still has a pretty good skill position, talent advantage there that's going to let them win a game, especially with Kansas traveling. If we were back in Lawrence this year, you know, it might be different because, you know, we're both in this sort of rebuild process. But I think with Kansas doing the traveling, I'm pretty certain on this win for West Virginia there. But I absolutely noticed the switches get flipped, you know, with some competent coaching down the stretch in Kansas last year.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, that is going to do it for us tonight. Matt, thank you for coming on. Where can people find your work online?
So we are smokingmusket.com. And we're on Twitter at Smoking Musket. I'd plug a podcast, but we have been way behind. So nothing really there to go for right now. But yeah, smokingmusket.com, at Smoking Musket on Twitter.
Awesome. Well, again, thank you for joining me. And thank you guys so much for listening. If you haven't already, please go out wherever you get your podcasts, or Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, any of the other million apps that are out there. You can subscribe to us by searching for Rock Chalk Talk. If you can give us a rating and a review, 5 stars, nice comments, would really appreciate it. If not, let us know what it is we can be doing better. We really do bring the podcast to you guys to get you all the information you need in as entertaining a way as possible. So if you ever have any comments, questions, suggestions, people you want to try to interview, anything like that, you can contact me by email at rockchalkpodcast@gmail.com or on Twitter at rockchalkpod. Matt, once again, thanks for joining me. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will catch you guys next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.